This is Bill Newman, WHMP.
We welcome to the studio author Jennifer Rossner. She will be at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley this Sunday, November 2nd at 2 o'clock. Her new book is The Mitten String. Tell us about this book. Who's it for? And then we're going to go back and we're going to talk about your first book, If a Tree Falls, A Family's Quest to Hear and Be Heard, which, as I was telling you and Monty off the air, had me near tears for hours. But some tears of sadness, some tears of joy. But let's talk first about the new book, The Mitten String. Who's it for? What's the age group? Tell us about that.
Thank you. The Mitten String is a picture book. It's for kids ages about 4 to 8, I'd say. It's a kind of a folk tale. It's based on a family story.
A true family story.
True family story of a great aunt of mine who was deaf, who lived in a little Austrian village. And she had a very innovative way of connecting to her child. And The Mitten String is about that story.
Okay. But this is a kid book. They're going to read it about, 300 times. So we could give a little bit of the plot away. Tell us what the string is.
The string is a string that deaf people have in the past tied to their baby's wrists in the night as a way to be able to wake when their baby cries or fusses in the night. If they can't hear their baby, this string tugs on their own wrist and they wake to care for them. And so in The Mitten String, I wanted to share that tale that I had heard about my great-great-aunt. And I ended up kind of looping it into a story about how mittens got their strings, the ones that kids have, shoved through their coat sleeves.
So they don't lose them.
So they don't lose them.
As much.
Yeah.
Somehow they manage.
Right. Nevertheless.
Yeah. Okay. So the core of the story is about your great aunt. Tell us a little bit about her and tell us a little bit about her deafness.
So she lived in the 1800s in a little Austrian shtetl. I did research to the best I could to learn about her. And to tell you the truth, other than various records that were in, census reports, et cetera, showing ancestors coming along, what I really learned was this tale about the string. I learned that from my aunt, who learned from her mother, who learned from her great aunt, et cetera. So it kind of came down through the stories, through family lore, as a way of.
And your great aunt was deaf, and she had children who were hearing.
Yeah, our family tree has deaf ancestors in a rather peculiar pattern from a genetics point of view. So, perhaps for full disclosure, I should say I have two deaf children, and when geneticists had initially seen our family chart, they didn't think the deafness was genetic, but then later genetic testing showed that it was.
Let's talk about your kids and your family, because you have written a remarkable book, If a Tree Falls, A Family's Quest to Hear and Be Heard. And the structure of the book is your life and your family and your giving birth and then raising two deaf children, interspersed with the story of your deaf ancestors in Austria, I don't know if the chapters quite alternate, but both stories go on and tell us the story of deafness in different worlds. The first part that had me near tears was your giving birth to your first daughter and awakening to seeing the doctors performing tests on her. Tell us about that.
So first, for my first daughter, Sophia, she was born in the year 2000, which was the first year that universal hearing screening was there. And
that means they're screening the newborn baby for hearing.
Yeah, that test hadn't been routinely run in the past, only if there was some reason. And we hadn't even known of a reason because we didn't know anything about our family ancestry at that point.
You had no idea that you had any chance, other than something just totally freakish happening, that you were likely, or at least even possibly, going to have children or a child at that point who was deaf. This was...
The whole thing was a complete shock. You read pregnancy books and you get nervous about all kinds of things that are, kind of in the in the air, but deafness was way off our radar screen. And so when this, it was actually a volunteer. They didn't even have audiologists doing it yet. Some volunteer wheeled in a cart and started testing our baby. And she was failing the first screening test.
And what was your reaction? You describe it in the book, but
yeah,
what was your reaction? What was your husband's reaction?
I was at first, so scared, fearful about, you know, how we might communicate. How were we going to communicate with each other? You know, it's a bit of a process. They give the first test, and then they go and do a more complex test.
And then they explain it may just be a virus, it may be an infection, it may be fluid in the baby's ear, it may be a lot of things.
Yeah, so come back in 2 weeks, and we'll do a more complex test, more texture test, and learn, precisely what's going on. So in those 2 weeks, you know, we were clapping our hands and putting the, you know, banging pans and pots and looking and seeing if our daughter would turn when the dog barked. It was a couple weeks full of a lot of worry, grief, fear, all kinds of things.
Music played an important part in your family, in your growing up, your parents' lives, and now your children's lives as well. You tell a story in this book about, I think it was your father playing the violin. Tell us that story.
Yeah. So my father, he played the violin really every day of my childhood. He's played every day of, you know, his childhood. And I think the story you're referring to is that I had the baby home in my parents' house, and my father came with his violin as if the audiology tests couldn't possibly be right. He kind of came closer and closer with his violin, hoping that she would turn to the sound of his playing, and she didn't.
Was that heartbreaking for you to see that?
It was. I mean, we had... I had been a trained singer, and I stopped vocalizing at all when I found out that she was hearing impaired, because it felt so so sad that she might not hear. And it was only years later with my second daughter that I realized that I could just fling my daughter close to my chest and sing, and that she would get a lot of the information that way.
You moved to Northampton because of the Clark School. Tell us how and why.
Well, when
your husband, the family,
we
moved across the country to be in Northampton at the Clark School, or to have your kids be students at the Clark School.
We did. When Sophia was just a few months old, I was researching every possible avenue to figure out how best to educate her, how we'll communicate with her. And we did a national search and found Clark, and actually we phoned them. And what I was so struck with after talking to so many different deaf schools all around the country was how the person I spoke to really saw her as a whole child, and that came out in the initial conversations. She was asking me all kinds of questions about her development, about her style, play, and all these things, and how we were holding her and feeding her. And it was really comforting to feel that we were going to deal with them as whole children and not just as children with a particular issue. And then we came to visit when she was a few months old, and we decided it was the perfect place for us.
And we should note, you have a position, you're still a professor at Mount Holyoke College?
I'm not teaching right now. I stopped to do writing full time. So I had gotten a PhD in philosophy at Stanford, and my husband was working in California as a child advocacy lawyer. And, we just moved, and we pasted careers over here as best we could, because we wanted our daughter to be at Clark.
This story, as you write it in If a Tree Falls, has, I know the kids are still kids, but it has really a happy ending. I mean, these kids are great kids. They have this hearing impairment that they have to deal with, but in fact, between the cochlear implants and hearing aids and great education and read this book, just incredible parents. I know you're very self-effacing in it, but really remarkable parents. I mean, they're doing great. It is a happy ending here.
They're doing great. They're really flourishing. And
I would like to let our listeners have just a little sense of what your book, If a Tree Falls, sounds like. The subtitle is A Family's Quest to Hear and Be Heard. Maybe you could just, so we conclude, read that last page for us. I don't think it needs a lot of setup, but maybe a little if you want.
From the very top?
Sure.
There? Okay. The veins in my hand throbbed and my wrist flicked as I thought of strings tugging in the night. In deafness, my ancestors found a way to hear their babies, and they gave to their babies a way to be heard. Sophia and Juliet were flourishing, and my fears for them receded daily. As Sophia spoke to friends on the phone, as Juliet took to whispering secrets in Bill's ear, they were full of make-believe and surprises. Like natural wordsmiths, they concocted stories more imaginative than anything I could conjure up. Bailey, the goat, jumped high in the sky and floated motionlessly among the clouds to escape a monster's notice. Then, after a tasty lunch of cloud fruit, was led home by a baby leader owl just hatched at the edge of the sea. They drew illustrations, invented sequels. They dialed my mother to share their tales, all parties using maximum volume telephone speakers. I was frayed and tattered, fatigued but not unraveled. My voice, like their voices, emerging. My ears, theirs. We would hear each other, and we would listen. I jumped into the fort to be with my girls.
You've been listening to Jennifer Rossner. She will be at the Odyssey Bookshop. Her new, how do we describe this? It's a children's book, picture book about the story about her ancestors. It comes from If a Tree Falls. It's a beautiful book. It's beautifully illustrated. It's exquisitely written. She'll be at the Odyssey Bookshop this Sunday, November 2nd at 2 o'clock for a book reading and signing, a Q&A as well. Jennifer Rossner, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with the Reverend and the Rabbi.
This is Bill Newman.